Welcome to Behind the Fence, episode 2, where you've got your two hosts that are obsessed with reality television, myself and Phoenix.
Hello.
Talking to two brothers who have been behind the fence in American jail and prison systems, David.
What up?
And Johnny.
Yeah.
Last we left off was with David telling us how and when he had been arrested. And this episode, we're going to be talking to Johnny about how he was arrested for the first time and what that was like. So, Johnny, you left off talking about the Smith brothers.
Dude, you left us on a cliffhanger. Right.
We were dying.
Yeah, I mean, David had mentioned it, and we had spoken about it briefly in the last episode, how we had a small group of friends. Like, we had a really tight-knit group, and we all hung out with each other, and we didn't really stray too far outside of that. We kind of just stuck with the people we were comfortable with and knew kind of what we were doing, and we kind of kept up to our little pack. And it wasn't until after David had gotten in trouble and my family actually relocated down south. They moved away from Santa Cruz. They moved to Southern California. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of started branching out a little bit and hanging out with different people. The two brothers that I ended up hanging out with, I didn't even really know them too well. I just kept kind of seeing them around town and stuff. And they had approached my ex-girlfriend at the time because they knew her from high school. And they had mentioned that they were kind of looking for someone to drive them to hit licks is what they call it, but like breaking into houses and finding ways to get money. So
wait, what'd they call it? Hit licks?
Like hitting a lick. If you hit a lick, like you're going to, yeah, it's retarded.
Damn, I'm gonna write down all of this
yeah.
lingo because I need to know.
If someone says they want to go hit a lick, they want to go steal something from somebody in some fashion.
Got it.
Interesting. Okay.
They want to do something illegal to make money. So, I started driving these guys around, and we would go and I'd park outside a house and I would kind of keep point for them and let them run in and do their thing. And we had a good thing going for a little bit. You know, we would split the money three ways and stuff. And then they had got arrested for something real petty. I forget what it was. They were like stealing foil from CVS or something.
What?
Yeah. That's, they got stealing aluminum foil because back then they were smoking heroin. So they smoked it off foil.
Oh,
and so they got arrested for that. They had their dad bail them out, and he put up his house as collateral, I guess, to bail them out. And so they owed the bails bondsman all this money and stuff. And they came up to me and they were like, you know, we got to go do this. We know where this house at. These people are out of town, blah, blah, blah. Let's go. And I was hesitant to do it. You know, I normally only did it Mondays through Fridays because that's when I thought people would be at work and not at their house.
You're 9 to 5, huh?
Yeah. And it was a Sunday. It was also a Niner game was on. I'm a huge Niner fan. I don't ever miss games. And I was just like, I don't want to do this. Like, someone just told me not to go. And they convinced me to go on. So I ended up driving them in my ex-girlfriend's car. She doesn't even know what we're doing with her car. She's at work. And we just take her car and we go up to this house. And it's huge. Like, you have to go down this huge driveway to get there. It's like a football field long. We park around the side of the house. And we go in and the door's unlocked and we go in the house and we're in there for a little bit doing whatever. And these kids, they were just weird, man. They'd like, one of them was like taking a dump in the bathroom and they're just like taking their time in there. And I'm kind of like freaking out. Like, we need to get out of here, you know? And
wait, you guys broke into a house to steal some stuff and they were using the bathroom.
One of them was using the bathroom. They just thought it was like, we had all the time in the world. They could just be chilling. Like, they were just kicking back at their house.
So we go from David putting socks on his hands to not leaving DNA
yeah.
to this guy who's leaving all of his DNA
well,
in the bathroom.
I'm sure he flushed. I don't think it was that, but like, yeah, I mean, I just didn't understand. Like, normally it's an in and out thing. Like, when I had done it before with previous people, like, we kind of were on the same page. Like, let's be in and out within like 2-3 yeah. minutes. Like, I'm not right. trying to be.
I feel like that would be the goal.
You know? So, sure enough, I'm in like the master bedroom and I just hear someone yell like, hey, and I'm just like, that's not good. And the two brothers come running up to me and they're like, dude, the dad's home. Like, what do we do? So we take off and the house is kind of shaped like a U, if you can picture it. And so the mm-hmm. courtyard is right in the middle of the U and the front door is right in the middle of the house. And so we ran down one of the hallways, like one of the like sides of the house. And we think we're going out a back door. We we open the door and it's like a pink bedroom. It's the little girl's like bedroom.
Oh no.
And we're just like, oh no, like now we're trapped. I'm like, what do we do? So I turn around, we're all freaking out, and I see a lamp right there, and I grab it and I like break the window with the lamp, and we crawl out. Come to find out later, one of the brothers had bled at the house. He left like DNA at the house. We run up to the car. I had locked the car before we went in the house. I'm trying to like unlock the car and I'm shaking. I'm freaking out. I can't even get the car door unlocked. We finally get in the car and I peel out around the house, and the guy is like chasing after us, and he has his phone out, and he's either on the phone with the cops or trying to take a picture or something. But I end up getting away. I go down, and the road I come down to, you can either go like back into town or you can go up, and it takes you like towards San Jose and the summit. So I went like all the way back and around. And as we were coming on Summit Road, like there's a sheriff coming towards us, and we see him pull over, and like he kind of looks down onto his radio, and I'm pretty sure he was like relaying that he was like in position, and we just happened to pass him. Like, I don't think he expected us to be there that soon. Like, they were trying to corner us in like that area.
Wow.
And we ended up getting around him. We got away. I dropped both the brothers off at their house, thought everything was cool. The next day, one of the brothers got arrested. They came to his house and they arrested him and said that there had been blood left at the house, and the parent whose house, the owner of the house, had his kids had recognized them. There was video or something. They knew who the kids were. So they identified one of them, and they took him to jail. And on his way to jail, the sheriff talked to him and kind of like hustled them a little bit. It was like, you know, I know you're doing this all for drugs, and I know you've had a really like bad go of things and stuff, and kind of like pulled on like his emotional like strings to like get him to cooperate.
Right.
And was like, you know, if you help me give these families closure, I'll help you get into a rehab. I'll make sure you don't go to prison, all this stuff. And so one of the brothers drives around town with the sheriff and like points out 15 different houses that he had broken into.
He tells the sheriff
he admitted to everything. So the sheriff, they have him dead to rights now. Like, he can't even fight it in court or anything. He just admitted to everything.
Idiot.
So now he's at the mercy of the court. His brother, 3 days later, is going to court for that misdemeanor case, the FOIL. And he goes to court, and they detain him out in front of the courthouse, and they tell him they have enough to arrest him and charge him with all the stuff that his brother's been charged with. Mm-hmm. And instead of keeping his mouth shut and fighting it and maybe getting out of it, because they didn't really have enough to convict him. Maybe they did. I don't know. But you just never want to really admit it to the police, you know?
Yeah.
He said that he would agree to everything that his brother did. He would sign a paper agreeing to it if they gave him a 24-hour pass. The reason he wanted to do that was because his brother had been hyping up that, oh, yeah, my other brother's going to be coming in here soon, and he's going to have his butt packed with all kinds of drugs. Like, we're going to be getting loaded in here. It's going to be a party, like, whoop-de-whoop. So his whole mindset was, give me 24 hours so I can go get a bunch of drugs and sneak him into the jail.
There was so much info.
Wait, hold on, Johnny. Let me just pause real quick. Just the pause button. Can we just talk about the fact that one brother just ratted the other brother out, like as if he was proud and had
one of the brothers didn't try to indict the other one. When he was telling the story about the houses he was going into, he was like, oh yeah, I went into that one and stuff. Like, I read the whole discovery report. Like, he slipped up. Like, he wasn't trying to, but telling on himself ended up telling on me and his brother and getting all of us involved, because they had to know that he wasn't alone, you know?
Oh no, I meant the drugs and the butt.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, that's just...
Oh, wait, what do you mean?
I don't know if everyone heard the same thing we heard.
I know, it was like drugs and butt. My ears.
My brother's gonna come in here with so many drugs up his ass.
When you go into jail, like, it's kind of expected. Like, if you get arrested or if you know you're going to jail, it's kind of expected that you bring something in with you.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. At least in Santa Cruz, like with the white boys and stuff, if you come in and you knew you were coming in and you turned yourself in and you didn't have anything, you're gonna get beat up.
Really?
Yeah.
But if you get caught with it in your butt, you get another charge?
Yeah, it's an extra charge.
You can get an in-house possession like that, but I mean, it's pretty hard for them to find. Like, they can't, no, it doesn't really work like that. Unless they're really expecting you to be coming in, they could put you on potty watch or something, but Santa Cruz doesn't really do that. They're pretty laid back. Ventura's a lot stricter.
Yeah.
You know, Ventura, it's a lot more rare for stuff to get in there. They have a lot tighter program, but Santa Cruz is pretty loose. Can we talk about this later, but I got caught bringing in a half ounce of weed to jail one time, and they didn't do anything but slap me on the wrist.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So wait, I just want to just clarify to you guys, because I think all the listeners are feeling the same way we're feeling, is that none of this is normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting anything in your butt.
No, well, not even that, but like having two brothers, it always starts with, I need a ride, clearly, because like apparently, David told that other guy, or David and you and your friend told that other guy, I need a ride. And then these guys are like, I need a ride, or they were looking for a ride, right? And then breaking and entering, and then taking a shit while doing that to feel so comfortable in someone else's home while you're about to steal, while you're taking all their stuff.
Side note, I've done that myself, so I get why you did that, but continue.
Again, not normal.
You broke into somebody's house and took a shit, David?
Don't worry about that.
Stop, David.
Look. Again, not normal. Y'all need vegetables.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, at the time,
not normal.
When you're using, it's because of the drug. I mean, when you're strung out on heroin, like, you'll do anything to get the money you need to get well or get high, like,
for
your,
sure,
your body is hurt, like, you're sick, you're literally, like, you, it's not, it's
but
not.
I mean, wouldn't you like, you know, squeeze the cheeks until you get to Starbucks or something, you know what I mean? Like, what is it that makes you want to poop in somebody's house?
Oh, I'm not nervous. Even talking about that. I don't know, that's, I don't
we're off topic.
Oh, I thought that's what we were talking about. Okay.
No,
never mind.
No. But anyway, you can continue. It was just so interesting because someone listening in, right, myself, hearing both of your stories, I hear a lot of similar things. There's a lot of parallels where things have been talked about so nonchalantly, even though I know for a fact you two don't think this is normal. And I know I've spoken to you off recording and we know it's not normal. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, sure. That you can talk about it so nonchalantly.
I think, right. Yeah, I mean, it all just... It happened quick. Like, we were very sheltered, and then we just went from like 0 to 100, you know, and it just was the people we surrounded ourselves with. That's just kind of what they were doing. And
part of it,
you know, that was 10 years ago. You know, I'm not that kid anymore. I haven't stolen a candy bar since I was 22 years old. You know, like the people, like when we're telling these stories, like these are different people I'm talking about. Like, this is not
right.
My brother and I are anymore.
Yeah. And I Absolutely. Think Johnny and I are the same way where, we can laugh about it now because it was so long ago. It doesn't, we're not saying it's okay and we're not trying to justify it. But like he said, that was a long time ago. And these are just stories of, you know, we talked about how we're going to be real on this podcast. And those are real things that we went through.
Absolutely. No, and that's something that we're really grateful for. As much as, and this is the point that we have to make, right? Is that these stories are super uncomfortable. They're, they're not, these things that happen to you, going to jail, going to prison, don't happen because the stories are easy to listen to or are palatable.
Yeah.
They're not fun. They're not cool. And sometimes they're funny, but they're definitely, they lead to a bigger problem. But anyway, Johnny, you were saying it kind of all led up to where you were at. So what happened next?
Hold up. We have an ad. Hold, please.
Drugs in the butt is where you left off.
Okay, so one of the brothers was super hyped because he was expecting the other one to be coming to jail soon. He thought he was just coming for like a couple days to take care of that misdemeanor case that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that they were going to be indicting his brother on all the same charges as him. So when his brother, it's hard. I know it's hard to get, it's, you get confused saying one brother, the other, but I'll say brother A, brother B. So brother B's already in jail. Brother A gets detained outside of court. And he agrees to sign whatever, agreeing to everything is that brother B had if they give him 24 hours to go out and do whatever he's got to do. So he calls me. He tells me that court went good. He's going to have to turn himself in on Monday or whatever. This is a Friday. And that he wants to go say goodbye to his aunt. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I go pick him up. We drive out to his aunt's house, who lives up in the mountains in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
He goes inside. He's in there for like half an hour. He comes out with a backpack and stuff. I don't think anything of it. He used to live up there, whatever. We drive back downtown. He said he had a bunch of coins. So we go to a coin star. We turn in a bunch of coins to get some money. We go pick up. And then we go back to his house. While we're at his house, there's a knock on the door. And two Santa Cruz sheriffs come in. And they walk into the back, and in his room, there's just like drugs and stuff everywhere, you know, like, but I'm not really worried about that. I'm like, okay, like, well, what's going on? What are you guys doing? I was like, I was actually just leaving. They're like, no, you weren't. Okay. And he's like, "Do you got any ID on you?" I was like, "No, I don't." And my ex at the time was like, "Oh, it's in the car."
Oh my god!
Look at her like, "What car?" The sheriff's like, "Oh, a car. Let's go walk out to the car." And we walk out, and it's the same car that was reported in the burglary. It had a missing front right hubcap, so he was able to identify it.
Oh no!
He goes in the backpack that one of the brothers, or the brother A, had brought back from his aunt's earlier that day. It was in the back seat, and he grabs it, and he's like, "Oh, this stuff was all stolen." That brother A's aunt just called and said that someone had broken into her house and stolen a bunch of stuff, and she thinks it was her nephew. So when I drove him up there for him to say goodbye to his aunt, he was actually stealing from her.
Wait, can the cop do that without like a warrant? Like just reach in and be like, "Hey, this is stolen."
I don't know. I mean, his aunt had called and said that she thinks it was her nephew because she knew what they were getting into.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But either way, they did what they did. So I was in possession of stolen property now. So he arrests me and he puts me in a cop car and I'm going to jail. And I'm scared too. This is my first time really going to jail, and I think I'm going to be doing some time and stuff. And it was the same cop who the other brother had like admitted everything to, and he was really good, man. He got me to admit to going to that house that day on the Sunday, and the whole thing. So I'm dead to rights as well. I end up getting an attorney. He tells me that he wants me to be as disassociated as the two brothers as possible because they're both looking at a lot of time. Because they admitted to 15, I was only linked to one.
Yeah.
So I'm in jail for a couple days. We didn't waive time. We didn't want them to be able to build a case against me. So they only had 10 business days to file any charges they could find against me. They ended up sentencing me to 150 days. So I did half of that, which is 2.5 months. But they gave me a strike and they gave me a 6-year joint suspension, meaning that if I get in trouble again, I could be sent to prison for 6 years. At the time, I thought it was the deal of a lifetime. So I was like, I get out in 2 months. And these guys, they ended up getting 10 years and 8 years. You know, I was like, I get out in 2 months and they're going home in years. Like, shoot that, you know?
Yeah. But
in retrospect, I would have taken the time right then because of that joint suspension hanging over my head, little petty things that I did throughout my criminal career after that ended up landing me in jail for much longer than normal. You know, people that I was doing the same thing with, they'd go to jail for 14 days. I'd go to jail for 180 for the same thing.
So is a joint suspension, is that meant to, like, deter people from doing anything criminal after that?
Sure. Like, a lot of times it's for people, it's their first time getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, you're a good kid. You made a mistake. We're not going to send you to prison now. But if you keep going down this path, like, you could go to prison. And I never committed another felony after that in my life. All I did was give dirty tests to probation, and they eventually violated me and sent me to prison for a dirty test. I ended up doing, they gave me a 4-year, 8-month prison sentence for a dirty test.
And what's worse, prison or jail?
Huh?
What's worse, prison or jail? Like, what do you not want?
They have their pros and cons. If you're doing time, you want to be in prison because it's more suited to house people that are going to be there for a substantial amount of time. The food on commissary is way cheaper. You get way bigger proportions. You have a locker. Like, you just have a lot more stuff. There's jobs. You can get paid. Like, there's a lot more opportunities. So days in prison fly by compared to county jail, where you're either sitting in a cell or in a little tiny, like, day room where it's just, I mean, it's not comfortable. So.
Right. So, David, just to clarify, you've been to jail twice, correct?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just to kind of shed light on that, I currently have a joint suspension as well. For the most recent arrest, what they gave me was a year, which means I do half of that in jail, and a 4-year joint suspension. So I have 2 years left on probation. So what that means is if I screw up one time over the next 2 years, they could give me that 4-year joint suspension.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then you've been to jail twice, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And Johnny, you've been to jail how many times?
I'm not sure.
Okay. You've been to prison how many times?
Once.
Okay. And that was for this particular incident, correct?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And how long did you have to serve in total?
All together, I've done a little over 5 years incarcerated. I spent about 2 years in county jail and 3 years in prison.
Wow. Okay. So my main question, and I think what ended up happening in our last episode, which is kind of the beauty of this entire series, is we're learning as we go, is I think I asked the wrong question last time. I think I kept asking, did drugs make you do this? Did drugs make you do that? And I really don't think that that was the right question. I think the right question is, what was your turning point? And David, I'm going to go ahead and talk to you first about this, and then Johnny. But David, what was your turning point that made you go do drugs, that made you do the things that you did? What shifted your behavior? There had to be something there that led you to your actions.
Yeah. So as I'd mentioned in the first episode, I started dabbling a little bit when I was 16 and whatnot. But the big thing that really, I guess, turned me over was when my dad got sick. Right before my senior year of high school, he had gallstones one night. We thought he was having a heart attack. We didn't know what was going on. You know, he has a high tolerance for pain. And I went into the room and saw him rolling on the floor with his arms clenched over his chest. And so we called 911. He goes to the hospital. He ends up basically the doctor, it was a botched surgery or procedure. They punctured his pancreas and his bowel, and he was in and out of the hospital for 9 months. He was in a coma for 2.5 weeks, where he pretty much died twice, and life support kept him alive. And for me, seeing all that was a crucial moment, because my dad's always been, he's always been the stern one, but he's always been kind of my rock. My mom as well, but my dad more so, just because, you know, we related on sports and whatnot. So when he was gone, you know, we had a little bit more freedom, but I also was struggling so much with A, him being gone, and B, the thought of him possibly dying, that I needed to escape from that. And I would go to the hospital with my mom every day. Towards the end, he got shipped up to San Francisco for a specialist 2.5 hours away. And I'd go with her, but sometimes she'd go away on a weekend. And I just started using heroin. I had met up with, I think, Johnny and a couple of his friends maybe, and they were already, he was already doing that to escape the whole thought process of my dad, you know, being gone. And that's when I really got deep into both meth and heroin. I was 17. I was trying to be a senior in high school, trying to, I guess, help take care of my mom, play football, do all these things. And I was trying to juggle everything at once, that my only way to escape in my mind was using. And for a period of time, I guess I thought it helped, but it led me down a dark road eventually, obviously. But that's kind of my tipping point of what really got me into the heavy drug scene.
Right. I mean, did you play football? Did you use while you were playing football? Like, how did no one catch on?
No one really caught on. So as we mentioned in the first episode, I was expelled from the school before. So I kind of lost all chances at playing. If I had, you know, played long enough, it's a whole 1 year transfer thing. So I'd practice every day.
You only
got
to play in practice. You didn't get to play.
Yeah, I only got to play in practice. If we made a certain round of the playoffs, I would have been able to play. And that was my everything, football. I quit playing baseball, quit basketball, everything. So that was my big motivator. But no one really caught on. I started to get close with a lot of guys on the football team. And I just kept using and kind of hiding it behind my back for a little bit. And then I lost football too halfway through senior year when my dad was still sick. So then I really had nothing to motivate me and keep me going forward, I felt like.
Right. Because I know sometimes now in school sports, like, they'll do like random drug tests, like make you pee in a cup kind of thing. Did that not happen with you at all?
Absolutely.
I never had to in high school, no.
Not in high school, no. And I went to a public high school my senior year. They had no clue. They didn't do that.
Doesn't, when you do like meth and heroin, doesn't it like, isn't there physical signs? Like, don't you get like all skinny and like you get like, you pick at your face?
Yeah, I didn't start anything until after high school. I was sober throughout all my sport career and stuff. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I was able to, you know, I did heroin, I guess. There's certain side effects. Meth, yeah. I got skinny for sure, but I was able to, I still kept up with my hygiene and stuff and brushed my teeth. So I didn't look, someone would look at me. They could not tell that
you
I was
covered up. And especially when you're that young, your recovery time is so fast.
Like exactly.
When you're a 17-year-old boy, you can just bounce back from everything, you know?
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, also not everybody shows. Like yeah. I've had friends that were using where I didn't catch on until year 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Which is insane because certain people just, like you had said, Johnny, you recover so fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think that's a telltale. I think behavior is the biggest tell.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. My parents really had no idea about my drug use until they came to visit me one weekend in jail. And I told them how long I've been using, what I've been doing. And before that, they literally had no idea because I hid it so well.
Right. So they had no idea until you were in jail and you told them?
Yeah. They had suspicions. They had heard people tell them I was doing bad stuff, but they didn't believe me or they didn't believe them. And, you know, they thought maybe I'd smoked weed or something, but they didn't know that I was doing a lot of meth and heroin until I was in jail and I opened their eyes to what I've been doing for years.
Wow.
Dang.
So, yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right? You go through a lot of trauma and that becomes your tipping point. But I guess, Johnny, did you have the same, are those the same reasons why you kind of led down your path or is there something different?
I would say different. I had already started rebelling like in high school. It wasn't anything crazy though. You know, my dad took me out of high school halfway through my junior year because I was like smoking weed and just failing out of my classes and stuff. So I had thought I was like already like being a rebel, just doing that. And then my senior year, I got expelled halfway through the year. And then I got sent to Bible college again. I went to Hawaii for a semester. And when I came back, I was 18 and I just moved out. And I didn't really like think about a tipping point or anything. I kind of just moved out and that was probably it. But just hanging around with that crowd, it just happened like overnight. Like overnight, I was just doing everything. And it was just because of the people I was surrounding myself with. But it wasn't until a couple months after I'd moved out that my dad got sick.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out, it hit me hard, but I didn't know how to comprehend that type of pain or grief like when I was that young. So I just pushed it out. I pretended it didn't happen. I didn't visit him at the hospital. I didn't talk to him. Like I saw him, I think maybe once or twice in that 9 months.
Wow.
And kind of just was out on my own, just trying to catch up still on all the good times I was missing out on, I guess.
For sure. I think also there could be, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's like that weird high, right? The high of getting out of the house and doing mm-hmm. all the things you've never done before. And yeah. then you're running with a crowd that you never got to run with before.
Yeah.
And they're going, let's just break into houses. And as much as that's scary, you're like, why not? Still, you know, and you're doing, it's super fun because if you get away with it,
rush.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Maybe, do you think it's like you were just kind of chasing that adrenaline rush between like doing the drugs?
Sure.
And
I mean,
things that were illegal.
It was my best friend and I, and we had sleeping bags stashed all over town, and we would just be out all night doing coke in back alleys and smoking speed. And we had a sleeping bag underneath the wharf. We'd pull it out and sleep on the beach and wake up. We were just a part of like the whole little downtown like society in Santa Cruz. Like if you ask anyone about downtown Santa Cruz, like it's a weird place, but there's like a whole community that you can like fit in with. There's like a tent city and stuff. Like there's just always stuff to get into. And we were just 2 18-year-old kids just trying to get into the mix and kind of just off having a blast. Yeah. Just chasing the next high.
Yeah. You know that saying where, if you hang out in a monkey's cage and it smells like shit, you hang out long enough, you don't smell the shit anymore.
Right.
I haven't heard that, but
I understand. Yeah, the principle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you get numb. You get numb to the sure. environment that you're in, and then you're like, it doesn't smell that bad. And I come in here, you know, we're two like, you know, different. We have two very different, I guess, paths that we took. I wouldn't even say different upbringings because I think all of us kind of grew up in the yeah. church to a certain extent. But for me, like, I'm coming in here and I'm going, yo, this stinks. But yeah. You know, when you were in it, and like you said, it was 10 years ago for you, Johnny.
Yeah.
It probably didn't, because you're like, that was just what we did.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm going, yo, you were homeless.
Oh, yeah. I walk around downtown now, and I'm like, dude, get me the hell out of here. I can't sure. spend more. You go down there after 10 o'clock at night, and you just don't. Yeah. You want to not. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'll go up north, and I'll visit Santa Cruz, and if it's more than 2 days, I can't go more than 2 days without wanting to leave there. A lot of because of the bad memories that I have there, but I just get depressed, and it's a dark area for me to be in. I want no part of it anymore.
Wow. No, I don't blame you. That's cool though. It's cool that you don't go back and reminisce about it, because there's always good times and bad times, but you're not like, shit, I miss that. It's more of like, oh, this is not good.
I don't miss that. Yeah.
I don't want any of this. But okay, so I'm really excited to hear about this, because booking.
Apparently they put drugs in their butt.
We're learning so much. I'm super excited. But okay, so Johnny, let's start with you. So you went to prison. That's a very different experience. Kind of walk through what was going through your head and like what happens when they're like, you're guilty, go. What's the process between you go to court? Do you even have some downtime before you go straight to prison? Like walk us through that.
I caught my case in Santa Cruz, but I transferred to Ventura. So I was in Ventura, and that's who actually sentenced me to prison. When you go to court, and they sentence you to prison, you can ask your attorney to ask them if they can put on there, like, I want to be sent forthwith. The word is forthwith you're looking for. And that means you're going to be on the next bus going. The next bus that heads that way, you're going to be on it. So I got my attorney to ask for that because I wanted to go and kind of just get the process going. Because I knew I wanted to get to a main line. I knew that it would be a better, more comfortable living arrangement than where I was at. So I took, I think, my deal on a Friday, and I left that next Tuesday. I got on a bus. We drove out to the desert, to Wasco, pulled up to Wasco State Prison. There was 10 people from Ventura going with me that day. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to get off the bus last so I can see what everyone else does in front of me and not look stupid and like get to, you know, just follow their lead. Mm-hmm. So the way it worked, we all get off the bus and everyone's lining up and we face the wall. And when I come off the bus, everyone had gone right. So when I came off, I ended up being in the front of the line. Oh. And we go walking in. They're like, you're up first. I'm walking up. I'm just like, great. So I walk up and there's these two huge guards all tatted up. And you can tell they're trying to like scare me. They can see I'm just like a like young little white kid. I didn't have any tattoos on me. And I'm just terrified. And they're like, hey, so like you going to be all right, little man? Like, I guess. I don't know. I thought I was until now, but they're like, so if you want to, if you think you can handle GP and you think you can hold your own, go ahead and get naked and go to the right. If you're a scared piece of shit and you want to drop out, ring that bell and go to the left. I was like, well, don't want to do that. So I guess I'll get naked and go to the right. So I took my clothes off. You're in a huge room. There's 30 police officers doing a bunch of different stuff. There's 10 female nurses. There's like 60 inmates in these different cages. There's like 10 different cages you can go in. Reception at prison is gnarly. Like you're just butt naked in front of everyone. There's nurses walking by laughing at you. Like people trying to just like clown you and stuff. Like, oh my God. It's crazy.
Wait, what's going through your head, dude? Wait, before we even go.
I'm just like trying to get my bearings. Like I had done a decent amount of county time at this point. So I was pretty prepared, I guess. I kind of knew what to expect. People had told me, you know, just be quiet, like listen a lot, be respectful, and just, you know, kind of learn like your place before you speak out too soon. So I'm pretty good at like being observant and not speaking out at a turn, you know, and kind of knowing like the time and place when to be a jokester, when it's serious and stuff. So I handled it relatively well, I think. I knew that I didn't want to go to a cell. I wanted to be in dorm living. So that's kind of all that I was worried about at that time. I didn't know what level points they were going to be giving me. And if you have low enough points based on your charge, based on your history in jail, like if you've been in fights and stuff, the more violent you are, the higher up levels you go to. And if you're in level 3 or 4, you're going to be in cell living the entire time you're in reception. So I knew I didn't want that. So I got interviewed by one of the sergeants. He asked me if I was gang affiliated. I said no. Asked me if I had tattoos. I had a little, like a cross on my leg that my buddy had picked one time and an SC on my back. Like, that was it. He's like, no gang stuff. I was like, no.
Are you still butt-ass naked in this line while this is going on?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Yeah, you're seriously doing all this. And, like, you're getting poked and prodded. You got to get, like blood drawn for everything. You sign a death certificate, like saying,
oh my God. Okay, like, wait.
Like,
wait,
you sign what?
This is too much.
We're gonna have to wait, and they're gonna have to wait to hear all of this on the next episode of Behind the Fence. All right, guys, You need to follow us on Instagram at Behind the Fence Podcast. Ask us questions for the last 15 minutes of every episode. We'll go ahead and answer those questions. We always leave you on a cliffhanger. Johnny's going to tell you all about his butt naked questions. Also, I believe he's terrified, but he handled it well, apparently.
I would have been terrified.
Oh, man. And also follow our Instagram because we post some funny things.
There's some funny shit on there.
But anyway, thank you so much for listening. I'm Phoenix.
I'm Charlotte.
We got our two brothers here, David and Johnny.
Peace.
Yep.
Until next time, guys. Thank you so much.